than what we had before, the volume portfolio we have now. So I'll try to focus more time on what we currently have at the present. So what are the technologies for testing that we have, all the different ones, and just give some examples. And later on, I will talk about the future, as I mentioned. So first, we will see what are some of the problems that we currently have, why the things that we have are not very as nice as they could be, and what to expect in the next few months. In principle, the presentation is not an hour long. I hope it's a bit shorter. So if you have any questions, we can wait until the end, and we can discuss the topics that the last 10, 15 minutes. But if you have any questions that are very specific to what I'm explaining at the moment, just stop me and we can talk about them. So the first question to answer about the past and present and future is why do testing, right? And I guess there are many programmers here, and if not, that's obvious, right? Software has bugs, and that's not avoidable. And automated testing just is a way of helping to reduce them. There are many other techniques that help in during development, but with testing, we just try to find these bugs earlier instead of waiting for the user to find them, and we try to reduce them. So obviously, this is something that was known by the original developers of the BSD systems, right? It's not something that we discovered 2 years ago. And that's why, if you have ever looked at the source tree of any BSD, there is a top-level directory called regress. In FreeBSD, it's under some other directory, I don't remember the name, but that directory contains some test programs that were developed a long time ago. And the problem is, if you try to run them, they don't work in general. Or if you run them, your system panics because, well, they expose a bug and no one has run them for a long time, but the test was there. So they actually knew this, and they wrote the tests, and they tried to write some scripting around them to run them, to make, but they didn't have enough exposure, like, to say something. And one other thing that I would like to mention here is that I think that in BSDs, we have a very nice advantage over other operating systems because the whole source tree is a single repository, right? So when we are writing code for any part of the system, we can very easily create tests, integration tests for all the parts that our change affects. Say we're writing a new feature for the kernel that depends on a change in a user space tool, we do that on a single tree in our project, right? And then we can very easily, or easier than in other systems, create some tests to make sure that the integration between our user lands changes and the kernel changes work well. And I think in BSD, we have this advantage compared to, for example, Linux, where each project has its own repository, and there is some projects trying to bring tests to the kernel, but I don't really sure what status they are in. There are several of them, each one with different approaches. So let's go back a bit to the regress directory I was mentioning before. And, well, here I've just listed. First of all, as I mentioned, there was a test suite. If you have looked at that directory at some point, recently I checked, and OpenBSD still has a directory, and FreeBSD, as I mentioned, it has it under some other subdirectory, I don't remember the name, but they have this, and it has tests for different components. There is some test for the kernel, there is some test for the C library, etc. But they are really not used, in the sense that, so usually when, at least in NetBSD, when the time comes to create a new release, you want to make sure, or you want to branch from current to create a new version, right? So you want to make sure that current at that state is stable enough to create the release. And the ad hoc approach for at least NetBSD was, okay, we install the system in a machine, we build a release in the same machine, and if the build, which is a process that takes a few hours and is parallel, et cetera, works well, then we conclude that the system is stable enough and we can branch from there. But that's a very ad hoc test that doesn't really expose many of the problems that we can find in general operation. For example, it doesn't touch the network at all. And the issue here was that, for example, in NetBSD, now we don't build the system anymore in the host machine. We always cross-compile, right? So if we want to build a system for an ARM board, we will not use the ARM board to build a system. We will just cross-compile from a past Intel machine. So we are not actually testing anything in the ARM board. We just build a project and then put it in ActiveDB and that, oh, that's our new release, and no one has actually tried it in the real hardware. Maybe you try to install it, and the installer fails in the first step, but no one actually saw it because no one went through the steps of running the installer. So that's one of the reasons why we need a better testing framework, and that was one of the problems of not using the tests. Actually, as I was mentioning, some of the tests that we had before, if you actually run them at some point, they would expose problems. But because no one was running them, the problems were never fixed, and we could just get big regressions, even if we actually had some way of figuring them out. Now, the other problem with the old system is that there is no consistency. And with no consistency, I mean that it was just a tree of tiny programs, and each program is just a program that the developer just wrote on his own, and it accepts its own command line flags, it accepts its own environment variables, and it may spit out something on the standard output, or it may return a different error code, and each program it behaves differently. So when you want to run them to actually test that your changes to libc are correct, you don't really know what you have to do. In general, there was some make files in there to run the tests, but the problem with the make files is that as soon as some test fails, the whole process stops because, well, one of the tests returns one, it's failure in shell, and then that's it. You have to figure out what happened there and try to run it again. And also, all these make files are different. Some of them implement testing code inside the make file, some of them implement it in the test program, etc. So that's what I mean by no consistency. That's something we tried to address when we wrote the framework. And, well, the other problem was about release engineering, as I already mentioned, with the idea of how do you decide if what you currently have in your development branch is stable enough to create a new release. So based on all these problems, that's when ATF was started. So when ATF, which stands for Automated Testing Framework, it was a summit of code project in 2007. It started with a little design document that explained all these little problems and how they could be improved and why we needed consistency. But basically, ATF is just a testing framework, right? It, as a framework, it provides us basically two things. First, libraries, and then tools. So what do I mean by this? The libraries are what the developers use to implement their test programs. You want to write a test program for the CP utility, so you will use these libraries to write such tests. Now, these libraries provide you functions to implement your tests in a more consistent way. Say I want to make sure that this expression is true, and if it's not, report it in a consistent way across all tests, providing you the line number and the error message that caused the exception, et cetera, or the failure, et cetera, et cetera. And the other important thing about these libraries is that they offer a common interface to the user. So these libraries implement a main method for your programs, and this main method provides the same list of options for any test program you have. So you, as a user, if you know how to run one test program, you know how to run all of them, because they always have the same interface. These libraries also provide, related to the checks I mentioned before, mechanisms to report the status of the test. So when something fails, you can provide a descriptive error message saying, this is why it failed. And then when you generate a report, as I will show you now from the tools, you get all these messages next to the failures instead of getting just a segmentation fault message. And at the moment, they had implemented, well, we have three different libraries for C, C++, and shell scripts, but the interface is an abstract idea, and we could very easily implement libraries for other languages. And that's something that is planned for the future. Regarding the tools, basically in ATF, we have two major tools, run and report. Run is the little program, it's like make, it helps you run all the test programs and collect the results, and report, it's a separate process decoupled from the running that gets all the results and generates nice status pages so that you can show them to users and publish them on the internet, etc. Now, regarding run, one of the other goals of ATF was that you don't want to have Well, you don't want to be able, you don't want to need to have the source tree available to run the tests. So in general, most testing frameworks are targeted to the developer, right? You're the developer, you are building your source tree, you have your code there with your tests, and you can just do make, and after that you do make tests, and that's it. But nothing, as far as I know, there is none that really puts the tests in the face of the developers, which gives some interesting use cases, and I will show you now. But in the case of ATF, the idea is that the test programs are exposed to the user. They don't need to have the source tree available, and that means they don't need to have development tools available. So, for example, when you run the test, in this case, you don't have make, you don't have a compiler, or you shouldn't, unless the test requires a compiler, you don't have a compiler, you don't have make. So in this case, run kind of re-implements all the logic for recursing into directories and parsing files that specify what tests to run, etc. And the other thing run does is it provides a consistent environment for all the tests. So when you run a test, you want it to be as most reproducible as possible. So if it fails in one machine and you try it in a different machine, you want to make sure that it fails there as well. So you can, if a user tells you, oh, this test failed in my machine, you want that when you run it in your own machine, it also fails in the same way, so you can debug the problem. So in this case, ATF, the tool run basically cleans out the environment, it spawns a new process, so there's no side effects between tests, it creates a work directory for you and it cleans it afterwards, et cetera, et cetera. This thing's missing that could be added, and they probably will, but that's the general idea. So that your own test program doesn't have to do all these things on its own. Like, if you create a temporary file, and then it crashes in the middle, what do you do with a temporary file? So in this case, it would be cleaned automatically. And on the side of report, well, you have run, we collect the results, and report allows you to create, for example, HTML pages, as I was saying, or just a plain text file with the results, so you can run it from the console. And, well, that's pretty much it. Now, ATF, it was a project that started for NetBSD, but it has always been developed as an independent project, right? It has its own repository, it's a set of the NetBSD tree, so, and it has always been attempted to be portable. It works in Linux, it works in FreeBSD at least. I haven't tried it in OpenBSD, and it got to even work in Solaris at some point, but, yeah. Yeah, what I'm going to say now. So, yeah, it's developed separately with the idea that we don't introduce any NetBSD dependencies in the tree. I don't want, if I put it in the NetBSD tree, then I'm afraid that people will start adding NetBSD specific stuff. And I wanted to avoid that, so it's separate for that reason. But yeah, in the NetBSD source tree, it's already bundled in there. And when you build NetBSD, you got all the thing compiled already, and the tests can use it right away. And that's what brings me to the use cases that I wanted to mention. So we wouldn't get these use cases if the project was not bundled into the tree. So for the use cases that we currently use the ATF for, I have classified them in two different groups. Some use cases for developers and some use cases for the users. For developers, they are pretty obvious, right? When you are developing something, you want to make sure that your changes are stable. So you use the test for that reason. You change some code, you run it, oh, okay, we're fine. I don't introduce at least any known regressions. And also, as I was explaining before, these tests help the release engineering team to decide if the tree is stable enough to be branched at some point. But on the other hand, I think one of the unique use cases of our framework is that it provides some use cases for our end users. And what do I mean by this? Well, as I was mentioning before, the tests are installed. So when you install NetBSD, you know, in BSD you have your base.tgz and etc and comp, all these sets. These are more called tests that will just put the test into your system without needing for compiler, etc., I would say. So the idea here is that when you are an end user, and let's say you're a system administrator that wants to install a new production machine, and you buy your new hardware and you want to put NetBSD on it. So you install NetBSD. Then how do you know that NetBSD will work fine in this machine, right? The developers will promise you, yeah, it's a stable version, but unless you do some real-world testing, you will not know if it really works well. So in this case, the administrator can just go there, install NetBSD, and right afterwards run the tests himself and have some more confidence. If everything passes, they will be more confident that things are working well, especially as we keep getting a more exhaustive test suite. And for that reason, for example, the after bootman page tells you to run the test right after installation. Some people have argued me that that's something that the user shouldn't be doing. That's something as part of release quality assurance processes. But the fact is that NetBSD being a free software project, we don't have infinite resources, right? So we don't have all the possible hardware combinations that the users will be using. So it's impossible for the developers to make sure that the system will work fine. So in this case, we're kind of pushing this to the user, and they will, if they find a problem, they can tell us right away before it probably propagates to something more important. But, well, it also, I think, other than just kind of pushing it to them, it gives them more confidence in thinking that the system works well. And just as this works for installing the system, the same can be said when they upgrade to a new release. You're running 5.0 and you want to update to 5.1, you will update and then run the test in the same manner and see that everything keeps running or not. And lastly, this also helps you in validating that configuration changes you perform to the system don't break anything. And one example is you just install the system and then everything works fine, and at some point you decide to change some CCTL parameter for the kernel. And that's not standard, that's not recommended anywhere, but you want to change it anyway. And you change it. Then after that, you can run the test again and make sure that this little change that seems to be innocuous didn't cause any problems anywhere else. So based on that, let's go to what we have currently. That's pretty much all the general problem we had in the ALS approach and why we came up with ATF. Now, for technologies, there is many more things that have come up after we got the testing framework. And there's also other stuff that I will just comment now on. At all these things, as far as I know, they are only part of NetBSD at this point. But as I was mentioning at the beginning of the presentation, it would be great, I think, if other BSD projects adopted them. Especially, I don't know at what point it's doable, but for some of them, it's very possible. Just as an example, I was imagining it would be nice if we were able to come up, for example, with a libc test suite that covers all the POSIX behaviors and stuff, and it could be shared against all the different BSDs. And if we share the same base technology, it's very easy to copy the test programs among the systems and make sure that all the different implementations are consistent and they expose the same behaviors for our users. But anyway, so the first related technology is called RAMP. This means runnable user meta program, something like that. This was done by NT Kante started, I think, in 2005. And it was kind of declared finished only 2 months ago. And what this allows is, this basically is an implementation of the kernel API as user space. So you have a library that implements most of the kernel internals, with the idea that you can get a piece of kernel code, say, manipulation of memory or device drivers or anything like this, and you get that code, you link it against this library, you build it as a user space program, and it runs completely in user space, which the major goal was to make development faster. If you're a developer for kernel code, usually the process of writing kernel code is very painful. You change something, you build a kernel, you install it, then you reboot the machine. It doesn't matter if it's a real machine or a virtual machine, it's just slow anyway. You reboot the machine, and then when it boots, you test something, it panics, reboot again, change the code, and repeat all this process. So with this, we kind of avoid all this rebooting and retrying process, but just being able to recompile the code as a program and try it there. If it crashes, use a program that crashes. There is no panic in the system, supposedly. And the other advantage of this related is that just because the user space program is very easy to write tests for this code. They can write unit tests for all the internal functions very easily. And that's what we are currently doing for here, as we will see soon for the other technologies there. Yeah. So the other technologies, they are all based on prompt. I don't really know. Something that I say here may not be completely accurate, but that's the general idea, because I have not really used this myself. But these puffs, pod, and other stuff, they are based on, but they share the same ideas as RAM. For example, puffs is similar to Fuse in Linux. It allows you to get the file system code and build it as a user space program. So one approach is to run it as a user space program, as we do with Fuse, like you can still do mount, and the kernel will mount that file system as a user space process, but you still have to go through the kernel. Or you can use the file system code as just a library and link it against another program and not depend on the kernel at all. For example, that's how the mTools package would have been written. I don't know if you have used it, but mTools is an old package that allows you to access MS-DOS file systems from user space without mounting them. And in that case, they had to re-implement the code to access the FAT file system. But why would you have to do that if that's already implemented and well tested in the kernel? You can just get that code and put it in user space and use it. But that's just an example of how this works. So with puffs, we can currently build, I think, all of our file system in user space, or the major ones. And that helps a lot for testing. So we have actually some templates that was made by Nicolas Joly. So there's some templates in the code that say you can instantiate these templates for a particular file system. And these templates implement tests for file creation, file deletion, renaming races, et cetera, et cetera. So just instantiating them is very simple piece of code. You say, basically, I want to import this header file, and I declare this macro to this file system name, and it will create a test for you. And when you have that, you are testing the same behaviors across all file systems. And we actually have found several bugs, just as the one I mentioned, rename races, where there is a very easy way to deadlock the kernel when you're doing a rename. And this has been exposed in many different file systems just by doing this. Now, similarly, pod is for file systems. Pod is for, I think, character and block device drivers. You can do the same thing for block device drivers or character device drivers, develop them in the user space, or just test them in that similar way. And with others, I just put it there because it doesn't really have a name per se, but for example, it was recently possible to build the whole TCP API stack as a user space NIM application. So you can actually have your own TCP IP stack for testing purposes. You run it as a program, and then you tell your applications to connect to that stack by means of, I think it's some LD preload magic, and then everything happens in that domain. There is no need for talking to the kernel. So you can actually test your stack directly. Okay. So that's from the kernel side. I think there's another thing basically these two things would allow us to do kernel testing. Then Anita is another project that was started to let us do install testing. We want to test the installer. Because in general, you install the system once, and then you keep upgrading it, but you never use the installer again. And it's very common for the installer to break, especially in obscure architectures. Like, you have your own Mac PowerPC that it's painful to install because you need to change something in the open firmware. So you install it once when you have NetBSD 4.0, and then when NetBSD 5.0 comes out, you will try to upgrade instead of reinstall to avoid the pain. So that means you skipped the installer process. So you didn't see if it worked or not. And that's very common, actually. It's pretty common that you get a platform that's not really well tested, and you try to install it, and it fails for obvious reasons. You said if someone had actually tried it, they would have realized that it was broken. So Anita tries to improve the situation by testing the system installer as an end user. It will actually simulate the key press on top of the installer and make sure that you can go from dialog to dialog and install the system. So how does it do this? Basically, it just uses a virtual machine. And the present, it will create a virtual machine with QEMU and create a hard disk, etc., and then boot the NetBSD release that you give it. You just basically Anita then install, and you provide it a path to your release build binaries. Here's a virtual machine, and then using expect, the tool expect, it will kind of scrape what the screen shows and send key presses to select the different options and provide you with an installed system. You can later, if you want, log into this machine and do any testing you want. It's QM, so it's a bit slow. And there has been recently work into making this work with Shen. And it would be nice if it supported other different, what do we call this, different virtual machine systems. There was actually a Summer of Code project proposal to do this, but no one picked it up. But the project description is there, and so if anyone is interested, it's pretty well detailed on what's necessary and why. So it would be a good idea to, if someone is interested in helping in this. So this was the first goal, just testing the installer. But later on, it became not clear, but an idea that came up was, okay, we can use Anita to install the system, so why don't we also use it after installing the system to run the test? We have a completely clean installation. We can just run the test and see what happens, right? And that was added later. So now we are using Anita for this main reason. Basically, Anita is, in this sense, is the canonical platform for testing. So when you are doing a major change to any part of the system, say a kernel change, you are kind of required to test. You can test a change in your own machine, of course, and you should test it with IPF if you wrote tests for it. But the final test is you run the whole system installation and testing through Anita and see what the results are. And why? Because, well, it provides us more reproducibility, right? If the thing fails in Anita, which is the same platform from everyone, same disk size, same memory, etc., if it fails there, if a user experiences that problem, the developer will be able to see it. And if the developer sees the problem earlier, that means, and it fixes it, no one else will be able to see it. And actually, this became a policy recently. So if you are doing development for NetBSD and you do something that breaks these tests, another developer can't revert your changes because you broke something that you are not supposed to break. If you break the test for any other platform, that's still bad, but it's not so important because you're supposed that you are not required to have access to them. Yeah. That, I'm not sure. It's probably, yes, but. I think if the breakage is very obvious, then you can also back it out, I guess. I don't remember this saying this, but yeah, there is no formal policy that says it, but I think it's a general. Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, it's true. Well, yeah, there's I think that's the only policy change we made recently, but I don't know if there's anything written anywhere else. But anyway, so that's all for policies, and then the dashboard, that's something that came after this. So we could have all this automation for running tests. So this guy called Andreas Gustafsson, I don't know how it's pronounced, but he came up with a continuous build system that kind of generated the status pages showing you, so he would actually have a continuous script, a continuous loop, saying update the tree, build a tree, and then see if things failed, if you think built correctly or not. So he actually started doing this first, and you can see here the red lines are just broken build, and the height is just I think it's the length of the build block. So you can kind of have an idea of how far the build went in every particular run. And Well, this is pretty nice. It's not as fine-grained as we would like. We would like to do this on a commit basis, but that requires lots of resources. So this just tries the best effort. It just updates the 3 builds, then updates again. Maybe you got 5, 6, 10 changes at once. But still, if you detect a broken build, you can pretty easily pinpoint what was it, even going back in time. So that was the original thing that he did with just the build status. But then we had a test result as well. When Anita supported running the tests, he did some extra changes. And here you can see every colored line is either build failed or build OK. And then if the build is OK, it will install it and test and try to run it. And then you can see tests didn't complete for whatever reason. And then here, one test failed. And then someone commits something, and then the test passes again. So you can get all these statistics in this, how do you call this, in this dashboard. So that was only the project of one guy. It's just some script that he wrote on his own to make this. And later on, some people kind of followed him. They also configured their own machines and with their own continuous build systems, et cetera, with their own scripts. So we got a more official release engineering page where you have a list of people building or testing the system. And here you have links to, well, for basically who is doing what architecture, and link to the status results, and, well, how frequently they are running. Some of them are manual, so they run bi-weekly or stuff. As I will mention soon, this is bad, because if you want to look for a failure, you need to click through all the links by hand, and there's no integrated vision of what failed. But that's the best we can do so far, and we will get to this very soon. But still, I mean, this, some of the guys like Andreas or with the other one. The second one, they do this pretty frequently, and if they realize they notify a failure in their building, they will send an email to current users saying, hey, you broke the build. And probably they will tell exactly who it was. And usually it works pretty well. They will fix the problem pretty soon. But that's, I think that's the major things we have so far. And now I would like to get into what I think is broken in ATF and that deserves fixing. Now, that doesn't mean it doesn't work. I mean, you are using Git pretty nicely and it works well, but these are things that deserve improvement. And the first thing is ugly code base. That's something that I would say is very subjective, and maybe you wouldn't agree if you see it. But so the first thing that drives me to say this is that, yeah, when we started the project, we had a design proposal, and there were some ideas of how things should be. But then the implementation grew up as a prototype. When I say we, it's me, because that was my summer of code project at some point. But it started as a prototype. We worked on it for 3 months, something like that. And then, yeah, it was integrated into the NetBSD, and we kept adding stuff, but it was never really cleaned up. So, for example, one of the problems of this is that the initial implementation was in C++ completely. And there was no library to write tests in C. But, well, okay, you can just write the test in kind of pseudo-C and link it to the C++ library. Of course, no one liked that. So I had to write a library in C for the test developers so they could write their own tests in C. That was an afterthought. So it was not, it's nicely integrated now. And I think that part is the nicest part of ATF, the C library. But everything else depends on this library for one reason or another. And that's really ugly, because it's not easy to break out this library into separate packets. Now, if you are developing for NetBSD, everything is fine, because the whole components are into the tree. So when you build NetBSD and install it, all the different libraries are available, and you can just link to one. But if you are a third-party developer that wants to use ATF for your own project, and say your project only uses the C language, you don't want to depend on ATF, the whole thing of ATF, because it will pull in dependencies that are pretty big, like the C++ compiler. So the main problem here is that there is no more easy componentization or modular stuff. And that's a little problem that should be fixed. Now, for this, I spent most of past year trying to clean up the mess, trying to split things and push inner code into the front end where it doesn't, nothing else depends on. But the results, I spent months trying to do this, and the results weren't that nice. So to the point where I kind of gave up. And now, well, it still works the same way, but it's just, I realize it's not that easy to split things the way I wanted to make the dependencies smaller. And other problems here are that the tree has few unit tests. There's a lot of integration tests, but it's often hard to change some internal things and be really confident that things work well or not. And the documentation is pretty poor. So there's some documentation for users, and that seems to be working okay. But if you want to get into development of the project, there is not really much you can read about, and it's really hard to make your way through the stuff. So basically, that's one of my main critiques for what I mean by the ugly code base. The other thing is that, well, we have some desired features that would be really good to have, but implementing them in the current state of things is not that easy. The first thing is parallel execution. So now we have all these, NetBSD the suite, I think it's about 1,000 or 2,000 tests, I don't remember now the numbers, but it's slow. It takes maybe an hour to run, and you can, if you have a multiprocessor system, you will see that only one of your CPUs is being used, and not even 100%. That's because, well, there is most tests are in shell scripting, so spawning the shell and doing stuff, it's slow. But it would be nice to be able to run tests in parallel, because in general, one doesn't depend on the other. Now, the problem is, due to the way the tools work, so we have this run tool and this report tool, they communicate each other with just a stream of data. That stream of data contains all the results, and when we created this way, the idea was that this stream provides you kind of real-time status, so the receiver can provide the user with real-time updates of what's happening. So you can have a test, and before the test starts, you go, hey, the test is going to start, so you can paint something on the screen, and then when the test keeps running, you can say, oh, it's finished, or you can show the user different messages while things are working. Now, the problem is this stream is sequential. So when you are running a test, you are bound to sequencing the output on this stream. Now, you could buffer things first, but then you will lose all these benefits of having real-time updates in the report end. And fixing this requires quite severe changes in the code. The other problem is the integrated dashboards desired feature. As I showed you before, we have this page with links to different reports, but I wish we had just one single page with, okay, here are the tests we have, and this one fails in this platform, and this one fails in this other platform, and this one fails in these two platforms. But we can't currently do that because the output of ATF run and ATF report is a set of results for a particular run. It doesn't allow you to mix results from different executions. And actually, this was kind of planned in the design of the tool, but it was always put aside, and now it's too far, too late to actually do it correctly and nicely. That's based on features. And for the last thing is high entry barrier for contributors. One of the things is the lack of internal documentation, as I was mentioning. And the other is that the hosting for the project is not, let's say, off the shelf. So getting into the tree, I made some bad decisions here. I started using Monotone for the version control system, and I guess pretty much no one here has heard about that. So, yeah, we talked about this. Two people, yeah. So if I had people coming to me and say, yeah, I want to check out this, and I tried the instructions here, but they failed here, and they don't really want to learn a new version control system tool to just work on your project. So they will send you patches against two releases back, and that's not nice, because they will not apply correctly. Of course, I could easily migrate to something else now, but that was one of the things. The other thing was so the project is independent, but it uses some of the NetBSD infrastructure. For example, it uses the NATS bug tracking system, and some people have problems with that. It's a bit ugly, but it's not really separate. When you have to fill out a bug, and if you are not a NetBSD user, you would think, why do I have to go through the NetBSD tracking system if this project is not NetBSD specific? And, well, at some point I tried to migrate to track, so some also release planning and stuff, but I gave up on it also. So the whole project hosting for this is not as nice as it could be. So after this, I spent past year trying to pretty much address the code base thing and the entry barrier, but at some point you always face the dilemma of it's worth continue refactoring or you have to rewrite. And it's seriously, it's a hard decision. Because if you start rewriting stuff, then you will have months where you will not do any progress on your previous project. And well, at some point past year, I think it was October, I just, as an experiment, I tried to start rewriting code for some parts of the project. And two months later, I had a replacement already for the run tool, where it could run pretty much all the tests that we had in the same way, backwards compatible. And so I kept pushing forward, and now pretty much it's working pretty well. So what the decision I have so far made myself is that the libraries for writing tests will remain the same. So if you write tests in ATF, you don't have to change anything, because that's, if I have to change, it's very painful. So this will remain exactly the same. But the tools for the user is what should be rewritten, because it's the worst part of the whole project. So this brings me to the creation of QA, which is a project. The name came from, I was just playing around with the word QA, but then just a bad spelling in my native language came up to be that. And well, it's nicer than ATF for some reasons that you may know if you're American. And well, you have to think about this as just ATF version 2. It's a rewrite of the code, but it should be compatible with what we currently have. It shouldn't really be very troublesome for users to migrate from one to the other. Particularly because the test interfaces are not changing so far. That may change later, but not yet. So the main goals we have with this is, first of all, really provide component separation. So if you're a third-party developer writing some project that needs tests, you don't have to depend on the huge monsters. I actually had this problem. I was writing a tool in shell scripting that I published it just independently, and then I wanted to write tests for this tool. But that means this shell scripting, this tool written in shell script, is tiny, depends on ATF, and ATF is a thing that depends on C++, and it takes a long time to build. So the idea here is to split this library in its own piece and have the tool separate, so you can only depend on what you need. Now, second thing is better code. That again is, how do you call this, subjective. But I would say during the development of this and the last 3 or 4 years, I've been learning much more better development techniques, so I'll try to do this. And one thing is to, for example, have more internal testable code, so you can have more unit tests of the whole platform to make sure that things work well. And actually, during the development of this new project, I rewrote some pieces that already were in ATF, and I wrote more tests for them, and I realized that these components already had bugs that I have never discovered because the testing was not exhaustive enough. And then I went back and I fixed them in ATF. So at the moment, ATF is still the only public project. The QA doesn't have any public release yet, so still, when I find a bug that's applicable to ATF, I go back and I fix it. And this will continue for a few months still. The other thing is easier entry for contributors. That's important, so people have, I don't know how to say this, just when you want to use a new project, you don't want to break your head trying to understand it for tools. So that's kind of addressed here. And of course, the goal is to be able to implement new features. So we'll try to address this here. Now, before I will explain a bit soon what these last two things mean, but first of all, how the migration happens, right? If we have to rewrite something, there's always a problem how to migrate. Now, the wiki page for the project has a migration plan, a bit outdated, and I should update it, but the idea is that, well, we will write the tools first, and then the libraries. So when you write the tools, maybe you have to change your scripts that call the tool, but that's it. All the tests you have written and that NetBSD is writing or that you may write will continue to run fine. And so basically, yeah, if you write tests now, it's fine. And at some point when this gets published and we see, and I still have to convince the NetBSD people that this is a good path to go, but the idea would be to rewrite the ATF front-end tools to just rely on this. So if you have scripts that use ATF run or ATF report, they will continue to run more or less without changes. Now, based on the components, this pretty much the design of, there was a design of ATF also before, except that we didn't have these two parts here. So basically, we have the list of test programs. That would be your tree. In NetBSD, it's user/tests. And there you have all your test programs, et cetera. So we have the runtime engine. That's what I'm currently working on. So this little program goes, scans all your executables, runs them, and, well, it collects the results for the tests. And the idea, this is not done yet, but the idea is to put that those results in some form of database. I haven't decided yet what that would be. An idea is to use SQLite, but it could also be maybe text files. I don't know yet. That's only that to be decided. And I will postpone this for probably the second public release. But the idea would be that you can have, you can actually run your tests in different machines and feed them into the same database. So later, when you run to generate a dashboard of results for many different platforms, you can just go to your database and say extract these results and generate a web page, which would be these things here, the analysis tools and inspection tools or whatever you want to call it. If it's SQLite, you can even use SQL yourself to extract data from the database. And from here, you could generate reports of a single run or dashboards or anything of this kind. Even the idea that you could go back in history for, if you keep running these tests daily, so print me the results of this test for the last 10 days and see if it was stable or not. Things like that. But yeah, I'm open to ideas here, as I'm saying. It's not, I haven't really made up my mind how this should look like, but that's what I would like to achieve at some point. Easy entry. Easy entry is done by using off-the-shelf project hosting. I chose Google Code because that's what my job forces me to do, but it's pretty nice. And you have the wiki, standard bug tracker, everything is integrated with each other. You got commit, things get updated. You have standard mailing lists, and the version control system, much to my disliking, is Subversion, but the thing why I chose Subversion is because we use CBS in NetBSD, and if I expect people to help, it's much easier to learn Subversion than Mercurial. For a CBS user, I think so, no? That said, it has less dependencies. It can always be changed, and I hope to change it at some point, but the idea of this was to choose a more known tool. Mercurial I haven't used it myself. I tried a couple of times, and yeah, it seems easy, but I don't know it that much. And, well, Subversion has its problems, but it was okay for now. So now we got to this page, it's empty again. Here I just had a couple of numbers showing, this is just internal to this, the ATF and QA, and I was showing that internal test coverage. So for ATF, we have 540 tests, most of which are integration tests, and these tests cover all three libraries, tools, etc. And when you run them, they take, in my machine, about a minute and a half or something like that. So in QA, we have 600, I have now like 640 tests, and as I say, QA only implements one of the components so far, the runtime engine. You can see that it already overcomes the test that we have in ATF, and it only implements one part. And all these tests run in only like 20 seconds because they are written in C instead of shell. But just some internal numbers. I mean, that doesn't have any effect on the test suite of NetBSD, but it hopefully these more exhaustive tests will result in some nicer internal code for the framework. then let's see if this works. Yeah, examples. So some of these are fictitious because they aren't implemented yet, and they depend on how the database will end up looking. But so queue a test would basically, you go into your test directory, you run that, and it would just scan the directory and run all the tests and generate the report. In this case, I'm giving it a session ID or something like that, so I can refer to it later. This is just an idea. I don't know still how to do it. It could be like timestamp or something like that. So just a way to reference, I run this on this day or for this purpose, and I want to store it in my database with that name. And then you could export this in a HTML page or text file, whatever. Also, debug would allow you to run the test and maybe hook the debugger when it crashes, or run the test and tell it, hey, spawn a shell after the test exits without cleaning up the work directory because I want to examine it, or I want to extract some files that the test created, whatever. That's in the planned list of things. And inspect is what I was saying about the history of tests, right? You want to run this test in a month, and then you want to see if it ever failed during that time. So you could use inspect or something like that. Again, maybe some of these things will just be SQLite queries or something, but we'll see. Just an example of what are the use cases that you should be able to do with this new tool. And lastly, it would be nice to have maybe email notifications. So I don't know if bundled in here or something, but the idea is to prevent people from having to write their own scripts around ATF to overcome the deficiencies. As I was saying before, all the dashboards that we have are just scripts that people wrote on top of ATF, because ATF doesn't provide these things that were actually planned at the beginning of the development, but were never implemented. And now it's hard to do them. So the future. QA01, I wanted to have it ready for BSDCAN, but life was in the middle and I couldn't. It's pretty much ready, actually. It's able to run the whole NetBSD test suite without regressions. There's a couple of corner cases that need to be addressed, but it can run the test suite already with the same result as ATF. And in that case, I don't plan to work on the database backend thingy yet, because I have to think about it. So that will be postponed to a later release. And well, some of the things that are planned is, so recently NetBSD got Lua as part of the base system to write scripts. And I'm thinking that it may be nice to have a library to write test programs in Lua, just because. Well, the things I don't like, the shell library, because it's really slow. When you write tests in shell, they are very slow, and you usually use shell tests to write integration tests for your tools. It's just much easier to test CP using a shell script than using a C binary. But the problem is we have most of the tests in shell, and the whole test suite takes forever to run. I have the hope that using a more different scripting language would be better, but that's just an idea, and it also has to be analyzed in more detail before going in there. But if that happens, it would just be a separate interface for your test. It would not replace anything that we already have. And of course, that's something that I would like to see, is other BSDs adopting what we have. Actually, there is two people from FreeBSD that have come to me. Well, they have shown me that they are starting to migrate tests as an experiment to ATF, and they have adapted ATF to work in FreeBSD. So I don't know the status of their work, what it is, but it would be nice if it kept going on. Yeah. I think Georgios Keramida. He has spoke to me recently. He's doing that now. I also don't know what status it is in, but I think that's the problem we all have. Yeah, the only problem, with FreeBSD, I was running it before in the past to run, sort of to make sure that the releases worked, and it was fine. But I think I have problems with OpenBSD because, well, the core code is C++, and the OpenBSD compiler was pretty old. That's the problem I had. But yeah, FreeBSD should work easily. The runtime engine is C++. Well, the thing is, no, I don't think that's going to happen. But if it's separating components, you could import the libraries into the base tree and build your tests using those libraries. And then just put the runtime engine in a port. So you can still ship your tests with just the base libraries that don't depend on C++. And then for only those people that want to run them, they could install the port and run it from there. No? Well, it doesn't really depend on. Well, this is not something I fancy writing in C. Sorry, I tried it, but it's just, I don't know. Do you get Lua, maybe? Nah, imports. Yeah, fair. Well, anyway, let me finish first. Presentation, and then we can have more comments. So basically, yeah, the conclusions. So far, I think tests have made NetBSD more robust. It's the fact that we have found many bugs, and we're actually pushing, I forgot to mention this before, but we are pushing to expose, or not to expose, just to represent bug reports as, how do you call this, test cases. So you get a bug report from a user saying, hey, this fails. You go at the test case for this problem, and then everyone else sees it. And when you fix it, well, you realize that test starts passing and you fix the bug report. So NetBSD has many standard technologies, as I explained, and it would be nice if, maybe not C++, but all the other stuff, it could be adopted in other BSDs. And just clearly say that QA is just an evolution of ATF. It doesn't intend to be a complete change in how things work so that users don't really feel much pain. And of course, other BSDs should join us. But well, that's it for the presentation. And now, if you have more questions, we have 0 minutes. But thank you. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Well, so that was a problem, I would say. That was a short-sighted decision probably at the beginning of 3 years ago. We didn't really look at what was available. I saw stuff like TET, and I don't remember what else, but yeah, I didn't look at PERT. And actually, when I got this presentation a few months ago, some other Perl guy came saying the same thing, that you found the same issues in Perl, and that there is some Perl testing framework that does these things. There's a lot of forking involved, and I just don't know why it's low, but just I know that the test written in Shell is much slower than one written in C. If it was in Perl, it would be fast. I don't know. It just does. Well, that's what are you looking at that project page?
Yes.
No, that's in ATF still. So this only contains the runtime. I forgot the page for ATF. Let me show you. Hey, how does this keyboard work? Where is the slash? Oh, there you go. Is it number two? No, number three. Okay, you can imagine it. BSD.org, tilde, JMNB, / ATF. Oh, and NetBSD. Yeah. There you can find it easy. So there's a couple of man pages in there, but in the meantime, what do you mean? I didn't know there was a POSIX standard for that, but yes, we have passed, failed, skip, which would be untested, and broken, which is the other thing, unresolved. Yeah, broken is if it fails for an unexpected condition. Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, I should look at that, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the results are there, but they have different names. But yeah, we'll look at it. Yeah, I'll look at that, yeah. Sorry? Yeah. Remote testing. I really haven't thought about it. The idea is just basically you run something in a different machine, however you want, and you push the result into the same database somehow. And for simulation testing, well, this is just a framework. I mean, if you want to simulate stuff, you just write the tests for that purpose, no? Okay. Talk about this more later, but I don't really understand what you mean, but I heard those ideas before. That's what Anita does in a sense, right? No, there's many things that escape my imagination, so I'm open to new ideas, of course. We're going to talk about this one later. I'm interested in it. I think there was, sorry. Would be nice to have. I've used that, and I agree, some things are confusing here. So teardown doesn't exist because, well, it does. Yeah, you don't usually write it because the runtime should do it for you. But what confuses users is that things run in a separate process, and things like PyUnit and stuff, they don't. So, well, for the setup, yeah, I heard the request for it, having a way to clearly define a setup for sort of tests. And I just don't know how to do it in the current. That you can do it already. No? I mean, yeah. Yeah, I thought about that. The problem is fixing this. I'm afraid it may require some interface changes, and that's. I haven't done it because, well, there is too many things to change, and it requires some thinking first, and I haven't had the time. But yeah, changing that, those things would be nice also. I don't know if to make it more similar to PyUnit or stuff like this, or something different, but I'm just not, it's not clear to me. That could be investigated. Anything else? Well, now I will just say one more thing, because now we talk about different frameworks. In the new Kubernetes runtime thing, what I've done in the configuration files is you specify for every test program what, you say this test program uses the ATF interface. The idea being that maybe later it will be interesting to plug different interfaces in there. So you can run foreign tests and iterate the result into the same output. Because sometimes you get these external projects like, I don't know what an example of. For example, Make is developed externally also and we import, or the other way around, but the tests are not ATF and I don't think they will be. But they, you want them to be run as well. So an idea you had is you can, in the configuration file, specify run this test, but just they are regular binaries. You don't have to do anything about them. Just run them and get the exit code, and that's it. And just iterate the result there. And just a hack to make things easier. I'm just not sure if it's worth doing. Yeah, it's worth investigating, I think. I don't know if it's a very good idea, because I'm afraid people will start abusing that instead of using or writing ATF-based tests. That's the only concern I have. Well, that's an idea. Still far from happening. But. Exactly. Yeah. It's an idea at this point. I mean, I'm trying to make it so it's easier to add later. But at this point, it's just an idea. And I'm happy to see that it's not, oh, don't do it. So, anyway, I think it's time. Yeah? No more questions? Okay. Thank you.